Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 73 of iGel Weekly. I'm your host, Andy Whiteside. Today is February 28th, 2023. You've got Barry Brown with me. Barry, how's it going?
I'm pretty good, Andy. How are you?
Good. You know, I think I ask you this every time, but I'm going to keep asking probably for a while. What's moving from the customer world over to the value-added reseller, partner, consulting, advisory? I could go on and on about what all that means, world. Biggest thing you didn't expect?
How much talking I do on a day-to-day basis, you know, talking to customers, talking to fellow employees. It's just, you know, my voice is taking a bit of a beating, and now we're doing podcasts on top of that. You know, it's pretty interesting, everything I'm learning about, you know, the other side of the tracks compared to being, you know, a consumer of, you know, value-added resellers, you know, being a customer. So it's, other than my voice and my brain hurting a little bit from soaking everything in, it's been a good ride so far.
I'm going to ask the question, even I think I know the answer. You enjoying it?
Yeah, I really am. It's fascinating to meet so many unique people and unique organizations and understand, you know, the intricacies how people are using the technologies, you know, that we both recommend and sell. It's fascinating. You know, every day is unique. Every day is different. And yeah. You know, sometimes I look at my clock and it's, you know, 6 o'clock, and my wife's calling me for supper, and you know, where'd the day go?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I get excited when I hear you say that. I literally got cold chills. Here's the way I feel about that. You know, based on your knowledge and your personality and your passion for the space and passion for helping people, I have one question for you. Ready?
Bring it.
Why'd you wait so long?
18 years, man. 18 years. I don't know. I really don't. Cause you know, I really, really feel like I'm in, this is my wheelhouse, you know. Yeah. You know, talking to customers, talking to, you know, technology vendors, and you know, at the end of the day, we do sell products, but you know, guiding customers on what the right product is, you know, there's a whole methodology to that I'm really, really enjoying.
So I've been working a little bit on the Zintegra point of view slides, and I didn't really know how to frame it. Jed Ayers actually gave me a book, and we talked through it, and that's what's caused me to do this. And that slide, that message basically is, you know, what are we doing? We're creating the version 2 of a value-added reseller, where we truly want to take good solutions from our vendors and help customers who are going to invest or have invested in those solutions get the most out of those solutions. That's not rocket science, but it's what we're here to do. And iGel is a great example of that, where, you know, people are investing in it. They're going to invest in it. They have invested in it. Let's make sure they get the most out of their investment. And that's not a hard business model to understand, but.
Yeah. And, you know, the more and more customers I'm speaking to, you know, maybe talking to a customer about, you know, technology X, but somehow iGel is making its way into these daily conversation as to, you know, why are we running a digital workspace environment with, you know, Windows on the endpoint? You know, these are very, very simple concepts to understand. And, you know, it's just so interesting to me that iGel, where it didn't really have, you know, a place in the North American market, you know, 5-6 years ago, and now it's all over the place.
Well, I came up with a good Andy-ism the other day for using Linux in general to connect to a virtual desktop. Okay. Have you ever used a rideshare service?
Yes.
Okay. Have you ever used a rideshare service where you got in your car and drove somewhere and met the rideshare service?
No.
Why would you do that? It makes no sense, right? Have you ever been in a situation where to some degree you had to walk somewhere to meet the rideshare service?
A little bit.
So that's my point, right? You wouldn't get in Windows to drive and meet Windows somewhere. However, you would get in a lightweight version of Linux and go a little bit, like walking, and meet Windows somewhere. That's the model. That's what we're talking about. You're using an as a service something, mm-hmm. Desktop, app, digital workspace, end user compute, VDI, whatever you want to call it. Why would you get in a full-blown Windows thing to go meet it somewhere? Just get in a lightweight Linux thing and meet it somewhere close to you.
Yeah, well, let me turn that back on you and give you a Barry-ism. Something I'm very, very guilty of is throwing my bike. I love riding my bike, throwing my bike in the back of the truck, riding out to the trails, and then riding my bike for 2-3 hours. You know, it's the same idea, right? You know, I could take my bike to the trails, but why do that?
and what you're saying is use the appropriate vehicle for what you're going to do.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. And I don't know if you know what a one wheel is. One wheel is my favorite thing these days. And I ride my one wheel. It's the skateboard with a big go-kart tire in the middle of it.
I ride one of those hoverboard things. Is that what it is?
Hoverboard is kind of a kid thing. This is a one wheel. It's go-kart tire in the middle of a board. You'll have to see it at some point. Just Google it when you get a chance. But, you know, I had to go to the grocery store. I go to the grocery store like three times a week just to grab something right before dinner. We live pretty close by. And I ride my one wheel to the grocery store and people look at me like I'm an idiot. I'm like, no, this is, I can get here faster on my one wheel than I can get in the car and crank it up and drive here. And it's fun.
Completely off topic, but is that common around your neck of the woods, these one wheels?
It is more common. I live in a place around a lake where a lot of people, you know, wake surf and wakeboard and, but not that common. No, it's
okay. I've never heard of it.
It's just Google one wheel. I got a couple of them. I take them to conferences and ride them from the hotel to the car. I love them. All right. What? So you and I were talking before this and we decided we would do a blog from Dan, our friend, Dan O'Farrell. Let's see how I do this here. All right. So here's the blog. And the blog is 7 deadly IT sins to avoid for remote worker support. And I'm gonna change the title on Dan real quick. And that is 7 deadly sins, deadly IT sins to avoid for remote and hybrid work, and to some degree on network, on the LAN work, worker support. Because you know, remote is a reality, but I think remote is a reality, so is hybrid these days for a lot of people. I don't know of anybody in my personal world that's not at least working hybridly. And all those sins for remote workers and on the network workers, you know, it's all over the place. And it's a whole new world that we live in these days. And to be frank, I'm excited about that because one, it's the business we're in. And two, I've been doing this for 25 plus years working remote or 20 years working remote. It's about time.
Let me ask you this thing. This is the kind of, you know, looking back in time, if COVID didn't happen, how quickly would you have seen, you know, the remote and hybrid model kind of, we're obviously going in that direction. Would have been 10 years, would have been 15 years, do you think?
I think it would have been a long time. And here's my number one reason why, is because companies invest in real estate and they want to see butts in seats using that real estate. And now, was it for the right reason? I live in Charlotte, North Carolina. It's one of the fastest growing cities in the United States. I drive from where I live down this interstate and I see the skyscrapers going up and all the cranes in Charlotte and Nashville and all the cities that are growing really rapidly, especially in the Southeast, but other places too. And I'm like, why are they doing that? I've wondered for years, why are they doing that? People don't need to go there to work. They can go and have a hotel desk that they sit at every couple of days when they're there and go in for meetings and then go work from home and not spend 2, 3, 4 hours in the car or train commuting every day. I didn't get it before, but I think it came down to companies investing in real estate because that's what they think they need to do, whether it's leasing or owning it, especially if they own it. And they were going to make sure people kept using that. And I think it's going to happen again. I think that's why you're seeing hybrid work, is because people want to be in front of each other. They also want to take advantage of that real estate investment. They don't want those desks to sit empty day after day.
Yeah, it's funny. I ask that question to a lot of senior people that I interact with, and the answer is always the same. It always comes down to real estate. Yeah. You know, investments made in real estate, sunk cost.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see what happens when, you know, leases come up for renewal in 5, 6, 7, 8 years.
So here's some numbers in the intro paragraph or the second paragraph. It says, in fact, 68% of Americans would prefer to be fully remote. The reasons are 94% of employees believe the productivity is the same or higher. Another key benefit is they believe balance and work. I work in this industry. I don't believe people should be that remote if they don't need to be, because there's a lot of value in being around other people. And look, I know for a fact, whether it's our organization or other organizations, people are taking advantage of that time. And it, you know, it's one thing when the pandemic hit, everybody wanted to be super productive, so that it looked like they could work remote and to be okay. But I see people going to the gym at 10 o'clock and they're there for 2 hours in the middle of the day or something. And I'm going, yeah, you're not really working that hard. You just don't have to go to the office anymore and you're getting away with it.
You think that's prevalent across all industries? You know, there's, you know, obviously, like you said, people go home during the pandemic and people, they work to kind of prove that it can be done now that pandemic's in the rearview mirror. Are people kind of relaxing across the board?
I think it didn't take long when the pandemic hit people. When they could get out and start going to the mall in the middle of the day, running a few errands, it took, supposed to take 30 minutes, takes 3 hours. I think that's what happened. We were all trapped in our homes and we were being very productive because we couldn't do anything else. We could work all day and stream video at night. Balance. And look, I'm not being I'm not negative Nelly on this. I think there's a blend of it. I don't want to spend 4 hours in the car commuting or on a train every day. At the same time, people have to realize their job is from 8 to 5, not 10 to 2.
Right, right. Well, it was interesting. In this top paragraph you're highlighting here, work-life balance is another key benefit. 75% believe balance, balance is better by working remotely. So that's a question obviously targeted at the employee. I wonder if you were to ask that same question to, you know, the C-suite or, you know, the VPs and above, you know, what that number looks like.
Yeah, I agree. And what I'm seeing, and I saw some of this last week in India, we did our company launch and one of the vendors presented, they're now using technologies in the Hello cameras or the cameras that are, you know, like in the sensing cameras to figure out when somebody's actually looking at the screen and there's activity going on that is meaningful activity, and triangulating those three things so that they can figure out if employees are really working or not, or if they've, you know, paid someone to do their job, which, by the way, Zintegra, true story. We hired a guy who then turned around and tried to outsource his job to another guy because he was working for three companies at the same time and he was going to pay one guy to do his job. That's a true story, Barry. At Zintegra, this happened and we found out about it.
This is not a systems engineer in California by any chance, is it?
I don't even remember who it was or where they were from, but
because that made big news. Like he had something like, I don't think it's the same guy, but this guy had 7 jobs and he'd outsourced a lot of it to, you know, workers in China, and he was bringing home 7 paychecks.
Absolutely. I guarantee you that's happening. In fact, I know it's happening because somebody did it here and they got away with it for like a month before we realized it was happening.
Wow.
It's insane. All right. Yeah. So let's go through what Dan's calling out. The first one, and I'm going to just point to you on all of these. So everyone can't use the same baseball mitt. I think that's a baseball example. What is Dan trying to say here that everyone can't have the same glove and get the job done?
So in the olden days, I'm saying, you know, I'm only a 45-year-old man, is, you know, when people were working in the office, they got issued, you know, everyone got the same laptop, they got the same desktop, they got the same, you know, workspace. You know, that doesn't work for everybody. You know, my needs are very, very different than my wife's needs, or, you know, somebody else in the same company who is in a different department. You know, finance needs different desktops, different software configurations compared to, you know, HR for that matter. So I think that's what Dan is getting at here, was saying, you know, he's using baseball as a replacement for technology, I think is what he's getting at.
Yeah. So your needs are different from your wife's needs. My needs are different than your needs. We may have the exact same job, but we do it slightly different. You know, just the flexibility that comes with the technology. And for me, that all starts with digital workspace and how that digital workspace gets me access to my digital transformation. And then if I log into the Zintegra digital workspace and I want to launch a VDI, because that just gets me from one digital workspace to the one I'm comfortable with, the other digital workspace, aka a desktop. But you may log in and do nothing but SaaS apps all day. And if I, the company, choose to allow both of those to happen within that digital workspace, as long as job's getting done at the C level, at the leadership level, what do I care?
Yeah, the tool shouldn't matter. You know, the like we talked to earlier at the top of the call, like the vehicle shouldn't matter.
Yeah, but most of the customers I go to and say, you know, digital workspace are using it. They're using it, but the first thing they do is log into their virtual desktop, and I'm like, okay, that's great, but you're limiting your digital workspace use cases to a legacy digital workspace, which is the desktop. Which, by the way, when I do my work as Zintegra, I quite often go to a desktop because I'm old and that thing makes me feel good. But at the same time, my kids, when they interact with a digital workspace, including the Zintegra one, I see them just launching apps.
Yeah, you know, it's software as a service is the future for, you know, even your old legacy thick apps. And my point that we get into in this call is what's happening in UMS in the very, very near future, where that's an old traditional, it wasn't a super heavy app, but, you know, big Java-based application is becoming a web service. Yep. So to make things more easier to access, and you may not necessarily need, you know, the big, you know, $2,000 laptop.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's so funny you said that, because I'm doing these iGEL conversion workshops. I got a $4,000 laptop in the other room with 128 gigs of memory, but normally I walk around with something with 8 gigs of memory doing, you know, digital workspace, VDI, SaaS apps. Because that's all I need, but I'm going to be carrying a 20-pound laptop around for the next little bit because I'm going to be hosting, you know, 10 to 12 servers on it every time we do a workshop.
Right.
You know,
even my day-to-day work, I don't know what's in my laptop, but, you know, I live in, you know, Salesforce, Outlook, Excel, all web-based. You know, the thick apps are installed, but it's so much easier to work for me work on, you know, applications with from SharePoint into web versions. So, you know, my laptop's barely being used. And, you know, when I do have some heavy lifting to do, if I'm on the road or something, it's VDI. I use our VDI environment.
Well, I love that conversation, but I'm going to challenge you on that real quick. I think the same thing. And then I'm like, oh, my laptop's slow. What's going on? And then I realize how much power those Google Chrome or Edge tabs take up. And next thing you know, I'm like, I've got 16 gigs in this thing and I've run out of memory just doing SaaS all day.
Yeah, but I'm one of those old school guys. The end of the day, when you know when work's over, it's a reboot time. You're not 60 days later, you know. So keep it fresh every morning.
But okay, let's go back and let's say Barry's 25, not 45. Man, those guys don't reboot anything.
I look at my kids' laptops sometimes, and they have old recycled old Windows 10 machines. My son, I counted last night, 68 tabs, and something like 35 of them were YouTube videos. Yeah. It's like. You know, he's only 11, but you know, as much as I want to teach him, it's like, how do you have 35 YouTube tabs open?
And how many of those YouTube videos were still playing in the background? I'm not saying they were, but
yeah.
All right. Yeah. So number two on Dan's list, remote workers want independence. They want to be self-sufficient. What is Dan trying to point out here?
So, to an extent, I agree with this. You know, remote people who work remote, you know, want to have independence, like the title says, but what that means is, you know, they want to have independence to, you know, schedule meetings around, you know, personal time, you know, maybe doctor's appointments, not, you know, running off to grocery stores or gyms, like you first mentioned. You know, in our industry specifically, where we cover all time zones, it is nice to be able to do that, where I may have a call, have to take a call at, you know, 9 p.m. for the West Coast. So between, you know, 4 and 6, I'm, you know, doing my groceries, but I normally would do that after hours. And so I think that's the independence or flexibility that the remote workforce is asking for or looking for.
Well, I think the other thing he's calling out here is they want to be self-sufficient. They want to be able to solve their own problems. They want to be able to open a ticket and it automatically, all the above get resolved without having to deal with another human being, which, by the way, that is the number one thing I'm most concerned with the fallout of the pandemic and hybrid work and remote work. People are going to interact with their computers a lot more than they interact with other people, and that's not good for the world.
Yeah, like you go on any subway or any bus or anything, like people aren't reading books. They're head down on their phone, you know.
Yeah.
Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, you name it. And as you know, even I was away last weekend with my daughter's volleyball team. I'm one of the coaches there. And after the game, we had a team building experience in the restaurant. And there's 15 girls side by side, every single one of them heads down on the phone, but they were messaging each other.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I'm not so sure what that's going to do for society, but I guess we'll see. The next one is a security blanket. Number three, a security blanket is much appreciated. Tell me what Dan's saying there, and specifically tell me why a Linux OS and iGel fits that model.
Well, you know, Linux, at the end of the day, it's a less attacked environment compared to the Microsoft of the world. You know, if you know how many Microsoft endpoints around are deployed. So if I'm a bad guy developing malware, I'm going to go after, you know, the 10 billion installed endpoints versus, you know, the 500,000, 500 million, whatever the number is of Linux endpoints. It's just for the ransomware crews, like you go where the volume is.
Yeah. Go where the volume is. Look, I'm a huge Microsoft Windows fan because I was able to borrow the operating system many, 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 many times in my career and learn from it. And it's extremely powerful and capable, but at the same time, it's extremely powerful and capable. And guess who also knows it's powerful and capable and widely deployed? Yeah, that's the bad guys. And so they can write stuff for that attackable world of Windows, widely deployed, extremely capable, comes with infinite number of softwares and applications that you don't use every day. I mean, let's see, Telnet client. Let's just use that example. Maybe a silly example, but Telnet client, that's a bad example because you have to actually install that. So let's say Edge. You can't get Edge off the machines. So the assumption is every Windows 10 device out there has Microsoft Edge on it for a browser. They've done a lot to try to secure different applications that come on Windows, but it's there. And if you can find a way to exploit one version of Microsoft Edge, then you just found a way to exploit millions and hundreds of millions of devices. That's a pretty good investment in your time.
Yeah. And go back to our conversation about the hardware, you know, to run Windows 11, it takes a lot more horsepower to run Windows at the end of the day. So if I'm a bad guy and I want horsepower for, you know, DDoS attacks or spam, you know, I'm going to go after, you know, the beefy systems, and the beefy systems are Windows.
Well, here's where I get someone's attention. In your personal opinion, Barry, mm-hmm. how many Windows computers in the world are lying dormant, waiting to be told to go attack something today?
Oh man, 100 million, top of my head.
It may be 100 million. Every grandma out there with a Windows computer has put something on there that's just lying in wait. I was on a plane the other day, and somebody mentioned that their grandmother was still using Windows 7 and how awesome that was. And I'm like, I'm sitting there just dying, going, oh my God, the thing has got to be riddled with viruses and issues.
Oh man. Yeah, and you know what's scary, Andy? Moen and I were traveling back from San Jose 2 weeks ago, and we went up to Jetway, got up into the airport. What we see there, the old Windows XP screensaver.
Oh.
In an airport.
And how long has it been since Microsoft patched?
Where, exactly. And this wasn't, a point of sale terminal. Like, this is where, you know, passengers scan their boarding cards, you know, so real information is being passed through, at the very least, a Windows XP machine in a major airport. And both of us were kind of like, well, there's an opportunity, you know?
I think what we're saying here, those remote and hybrid workers, they need a level of security that's just kind of implied and happens. And again, love Windows, but if you don't need it on the endpoint, right? If you don't need that car to go drive to meet an Uber guy, if you could just walk down the hall and meet him at the end of the terminal, let's just do that, because that's all we need. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Number four, no one loves a vacuum. I didn't read ahead, so I don't know exactly what this one's about. What's Dan trying to point out here with?
Yeah, I'm not sure I get how the title relates to what he's talking about, because what he's talking about is updating, patching, you know, malware analysis, or not analysis, but malware scanning at the endpoint. I'm not sure that relates to being a vacuum, but, you know, it sounds like we're bashing Windows, but I don't think that's the case here, because both you and I, you know, we've built careers on Microsoft technologies. But why would you spend time and effort and, you know, dollars at the end of the day, you know, patching Microsoft in a traditional way with your SCCMs, with your, you know, WSS, when, you know, you could use something like a ThinEdge that has, you know, a single piece of firmware you can push down remotely, securely, and very, very quickly, compared to, you know, your patch Tuesdays that are every month.
Well, keep in mind, we're not saying don't use Windows. We're just saying don't use Windows to connect to Windows.
Yes, yes, yes. Windows at the edge, it made sense once upon a time. But with the whole new digital workspace and, you know, growth or explosion we've seen in the last several years, it doesn't make sense anymore.
Look, I'm living proof. In 1998, 99, I installed Red Hat Linux, and all I did was put the RDP component on it and turn around and connect to Windows, because I had to get my job done. But at that moment in time, I was like, okay, this is awesome. Why would I? I'm going to use that Citrix environment anyway. Just put Linux on it and be done. Plus, I was the coolest kid in IT.
So you thought.
I thought I was anyway. All right. Number five is walk the digital talk. Walk the digital talk. What's he saying here?
Yeah. So what he's talking about here is the digital experience. So, you know, employees are kind of demanding, I don't want to say the latest and greatest, but certainly more collaboration within the environment. So we're talking here about, you know, our Zoom, our Slacks, our, you know, a modern workspace, as opposed to, you know, picking up the phone and calling Jane from HR when you can, you know, talk to them on a more real time, with more real time interaction. And, you know, that's just not for on-prem tools, but that's leveraging things in the cloud, like your SaaS applications, to, you know, or your Citrix environment, your digital workspaces, things like, you know, video calls. Like, that just blew up over the pandemic, and that's never ever going away again.
Right. Yeah. I actually had a moment yesterday where I, had to call a guy on our team and say, hey, what happened to our GPUs and our virtual desktops? And he's like, what do you mean? It's still in there. I'm like, no, it's not. And the only reason I knew is because I went to watch some video. Like, when I was in India last week, I watched TV through YouTube TV in my virtual desktop, and it was good. But I wanted to see the impact it was having on our GPUs, and there was none, because there was no GPU in our virtual desktop, and there always has been. And then what I learned is we moved our internal non-persistent virtual desktops over to Zen Server on a new hardware platform, and they didn't enable the GPUs, which is totally fine. But I was like, well, how did you not know that? He's like, well, I use Zoom all the time in my virtual desktop or Teams, but it's offloaded, so it's not actually using the resources internally. You know, the next time they do it and it, for whatever reason, wouldn't get offloaded, they would have figured out pretty quick, hey, where'd my GPU go?
Well, I tell you what, give credit to the team that made that migration, because I didn't know that happened. And I just used it a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
Wow.
Supposed to know. IT is supposed to be invisible.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the unsung heroes of the world.
Well, let me say it the way I really mean it, because most companies don't get it. IT should be an invisible profit center. Not a loss center, but a profit center.
A profit center. That's the first time I think I've even heard say, hey, IT is a profit center.
Well, that's, yeah. I mean, you're coming from corporate world where it's always seen as a cost. It should be an invisible enabler to drive more profits. And here's what I mean by that. Go to any person in the company, especially those naysayers that would tell you that it's a cost center, take away their computer for the day and see how much work they get done.
Right. I mean, that makes sense. Yeah.
Give them a pencil and piece of paper and tell them they got to do all their accounting in using pencil and paper and an abacus and a calculator. See how productive they are. All right. Eliminate bad reviews. Post-pandemic world, end users have more influence and clout than ever. How do we make sure they're happy?
Well, this is exactly what you just spoke about. You know, IT needs to be invisible. Stuff just needs to work. You know, the generations, again, with my old man, the generations coming up, they don't care how things work as long as it does. Yeah. You know, my kids, they open up their iPad, they click on YouTube. If the video plays, great. If it doesn't play, I get the call. And then that's what it's going about here. You know, you just make the experience for the employee as hassle-free or as friction-free as possible, which is why, you know, you don't want the IT departments getting the bad reviews like he's talking about in this point here.
Yeah, I think the way I would say it is IT needs to be an invisible, I'm going to tweak what I said a while ago, needs to be an invisible leader profit center.
Invisible leader profit center. Okay.
It needs to help lead the organization forward, whether the person consuming the IT realized it happened or not.
Okay. But okay, I'm going to challenge you for a second. How are you invisible while leading?
So you're making the user's ability to do their job better by giving them technologies that they didn't know they didn't need, they didn't know they needed. And you're doing it in such a way where you're just kind of putting it out there for them and they start to adopt it. We've had great success with VDI and other digital workspace solutions in the past where if done correctly, people start doing behaviors that enable them to do their job better and don't even realize it's happening. And or, you know, one group starts to use it and another group start to knock on your door, say, hey, I need that too. This VPN crap I've been using for all these years isn't getting it done for me fast enough. If you do it the right way, and you not only eliminate bad reviews, but you enable good reviews, things start to happen and you're kind of leading the organization. The organization doesn't realize it, but now they're, you know, you open up, let's say you implement like we're doing ServiceNow, and all of a sudden you can self-service your situation. In 3 months, people forget that they ever had it the old way. And now they open a ticket and that desktop magically reboots and it's ready to go. Now they just, that's all they'll ever know, right? You
right, help
be progressive. And all they knew is they opened a ticket and magically happened and like, okay, got done.
Okay. I get it.
All right. Number seven, advocate for the employee. I don't know why we even have to call that out. That should have always been the case. However, in IT, we're very, very, very guilty of being narcissists and self-centered and what we think's best. And I've been in situations where we never even go talk to the employee. Like, how's it going? It's going great. Have you asked your end users? Well, no, I don't need to. I know it's going great. Well, let's go ask them. Then you go ask them. It's like, oh, they're not very happy after all. They just
it's not even that. You know, in my last role, we had an initiative where, you know, I'd spend some time with the end user that sit down for, you know, 3 or 4 hours with an employee and just shadow them for the morning saying and see how they actually navigate the tools that IT provided. And some of the tools provided, one, they didn't know how to use, B, they didn't know existed, and C, they didn't like. But, you know, we were buying best in class products and, you know, pushing them out to our employees and they didn't want and or need it.
Yeah. It's a relationship. You've got to understand the other person's perspective. You know why it's important to understand their perspective? Because their perspective is their reality, whether you like it or not.
100%. Yeah. And if IT is giving them, you know, tools that they don't want, don't need, it's just more junk in their way, you know, right?
Yeah, for sure. And we in IT are, okay, so I'll tell you my story real quick. So I was in a logistics world. I was in a operational role and then a sales role. And then my girlfriend at the time, I said to her, I'm going to get into IT because I guess that's where my passion is. I didn't realize it, but that's where it's at. And she said, well, that's good because you're really good at telling people what to do. And to this day, it hit hard, but it's true, right? I mean, but I've also challenged myself on not being that guy. And there's been moments in my life that I have been that guy, but she was 100% right. I was an IT jerk trying to tell people how to do things based on what I'd learned. And I really need to listen more to them.
Yeah, 100%. So that interaction with the end user community within your organization, it's so key to get things right. You know, it's great to have all the tools, all the hardware in the world, but if it's not enabling productivity with your end user base, what's the point?
And the key to know there is you never get it right. You're always working towards making it the best it can be for everybody involved. It never ends.
Yeah, and it's great to say, you know, let's meet with the users on February 1st every year, but that's no bueno. It has to be a constant conversation. You know, things change, people change, roles evolve. So it needs to be a consistent thing within your organization.
That's something that we haven't done here that I really, really have always wanted to get done. And that is the idea that we have our customer success team going into our customers and not talking to IT. Yes, we're talking to IT, but let's go talk to end users. Let's do some workshops. Let's ask some open-ended questions and see what they say. I gotta go talk to Bridget, who runs our customer success team, and revisit that conversation. I think we've got to go do that. And it's for the good of our customers, the IT departments we work with, to go, you know, take those bullets, take those daggers, take those arrows, and then bring those back in a constructive way to IT. I'm guessing by what I know of you at this point, it's probably something you would be passionate about too.
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, just if you were going on that path, you know, one, I think it'd be appreciated by our customer base that, you know, you're skipping the IT piece, because, you know, we interact with the IT folks regularly to implement a solution for reason XYZ, but it'd be so great to talk to the end user saying, you know, once this project is wrapped up, you know, what were the benefits for you? How do we help you improve in your day-to-day job?
Yeah. And then you ask that major selling question, all right, what else would you like? And the next thing you know, that's
right.
101, just serving the client and finding out what their needs are. And if you can get to the end user and find out what their needs are, connecting that does not.
Kind of do it from reverse, do it from the end user back out to IT. So yeah, that makes 100% sense.
All right. Well, those are the 7 deadly sins of IT Dan called out. Barry, where's all this heading in your opinion?
It really goes back to what we talked about at the top of the call, that, you know, people are not going to go back to the office en masse unless they absolutely have to for whatever reason. So I think it's really the 7 deadly sins to avoid in a hybrid workforce is what Dan's called out here. Yeah. You know, some of it can be for, you know, on-prem traditional office workers, but I really think he's focusing here on the remote and the hybrid piece. And, you know, it's all, I don't want to say it's common sense, but it's certainly, you know, good guidelines to follow.
Well, sometimes common sense, you know, sometimes our day-to-day gets in the way of common sense and we don't stop and challenge ourselves on some of these things.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm going to leave us with this, the last line Dan has here, and I'm going to tweak it slightly. By listening to workers, securing the cloud workspaces, those digital workspaces, those end-user workloads, and advocating for tech improvements that impact the business in a positive way, I added that part, IT can help retain and attract the best people. And his words are, weather the storm. I'm saying survive in advance.
Survive in advance. I like that better than storm.
Yeah. It's a competition. We're all competing for those workers. We're competing for in our chosen industries. Technology is the enabler, not the call center.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, Barry, with that, I'm going to wrap us up. I got to go. Chris Feeney's here, and we're going to go work on our workshops that we have coming up, the iJoe workshop. So stay tuned. Check out the Zintegra website. I need to talk to you just as soon as we get 1 or 2 under our belts, and we need to start doing these in Canada, as well as India and all across the US. I'm looking forward to getting out in front of customers and teaching and learning from them what they need in the solutions.
Yeah, it's going to be a fantastic year coming up. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. All right, sir. Thank you.
All right, talk soon. Bye-bye.